RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post-Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
Told the Netflix numbers, I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times, I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
A whole part of the show, man.
And welcome, everybody, to Pollock and Thurston for what? Thursday,
March
the 19th. Here we are, live to talk about a plethora of topics, many of which I'm sure they are going to overlap to the most engaging of topics that everyone is most interested in. And little did we know that when Brandon Thurston set out to uncover what he felt were some overly broad redactions in the shareholder lawsuit, little did we know that once that black ink was removed, would those three precious words, All Elite Wrestling, be found under that very ink? And Brandon Thurston found out that answer this week, and that is where we are going to lead off. How are you, Brandon?
I'm fine. I am now a homeowner.
Wow.
That's the big lead today.
So a big article, clearly. Like this was life-changing for you.
Well, no, I've been a homeowner since before this article was published this afternoon. Okay. But I can now vote if it's the 1770s or something like that. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on the completion of this acquisition, this strategic acquisition on your part.
It bears a lot of similarities to what we're going to talk about today.
Well, were there a lot of bidders for this piece of property?
There were two bidders.
Sealed or unsealed?
I think we both bid the same thing, and then we came back with a second round of bidding and I guess outbid the other bidder.
So if this was, let's say this was a house bidder one, I mean, if you disclosed who that person was, do you think that that would poison future house bids that person would make if it was known publicly that they bid for this home with you and it got out there who their identity was?
I feel like you're casting some shade at our friends at KKR, the private equity firm
brought them up. I'm talking about homeowners here. I mean, have we lost everybody here right off the top? I mean, no, what a conversation.
I don't even know the identity of the other house bidder.
Yeah. When we were previous to buying this house, we were, we lived in a condo and we were in the process of selling that condo, and we were pretty much, there was a bunch of people that had put in bids and one person who was not pleasant to deal with. And we were going to take a slightly smaller offer for this family. And then this guy ended up upping his bid by such a significant amount that it was kind of tough, but we did end up taking the higher price. He just went a ridiculous amount above. But anyway, so... assholes do win out sometimes when it comes to bidding wars and such. But let us get into the major story. Well, there's several major stories this week. We're going to get into all of them, but we're going to start off with the 2023 bidding process for WWE, which ultimately went to Endeavor. But what an interesting horse race it was. And so to bring everyone up to speed, Brandon Thurston led the charge here when the ongoing shareholder lawsuit, which as of last check is still scheduled for a trial in June. Book your accommodations now.
I have.
The shareholder lawsuit is ongoing, and in filings, this was back in December, you ended up challenging some of the redactions, arguing that they were overly broad. And as we have outlined on our shows, the judge, Travis Laster, ruled in your favor that you made a successful argument here and that the parties would have to refile with several of the key pieces of information unredacted. And that occurred over the past week. And I think generally anyone that was paying close attention to this whole sale process, which led to the merger of WWE and UFC, would have been familiar with Liberty Media and KKR as two of the bidders. It was just, this was concrete in the filings. These were the identities of two of the bidders.
Yeah. So you may be overstating my judicial victory slightly, that the burden, I don't know that it's quite fair to say that the judge favored my argument, because the burden, this, people really care about this, the burden is with the moving party here. And by the way, Monday was National Freedom of Information a day in commemoration of James Madison's birthday. And so In the favor of making things transparent for the public interest, the burden is with the party who wants to hold on to this information. Anyway, I did have to oppose it. I did oppose it, but the judge never had to really consider my arguments, because the judge determined that their arguments just weren't good enough on their own. Anyway, so of course this lawsuit has been going on since November of 2023. It's in response to the merger that happened in April 2023. And we've been, you know, sort of looking and speculating about who these, we know that there are four bidders, right? There were 20 indications of interest when Vince McMahon came back and said, we're going to sell the company or maybe take it private or merge. There were 20 indications of interest. There were eight somethings that were not quite bids, but they were better than bids. I'm sorry. There were 20 potential counterparties who were identified. There were eight indications of interest. And then only four actually made formal bids, I guess. And we knew that this was Liberty Media. Liberty Media is the parent company of Formula One Racing. Lots of other things they used to own. I think used to own the Atlanta Braves. KKR, which is one of the world's biggest private equity firms, was another one that we strongly suspected was a bidder, because they were all over the docket and one of their partners was deposed anyway. And then there was this strategic party too, who all of these parties had been mentioned under anonymized names in WWE's filings in like May, the month after this merger deal was done. They put out this narrative saying, okay, this is what Endeavor did. And we had these other parties, because you got to disclose certain things to your investors, say, yeah, this is what the shopping process was like, to reassure your investors that it was fair, which these plaintiffs say it wasn't. So they just had these anonymous names. And I figured, well, you know, as the talk was going leading up to this, you know, merger being shopped, is that who would be the most likely parties to be interested, especially given that WWE's media rights were up for renewal around the same time. You would think it would be some of the media companies that use broadcast rights or were currently using broadcast rights, like NBC Universal. And I just kind of figured that strategic party number two was NBC Universal, but not the case. It was not NBC Universal. Was it Netflix, who ended up paying $500 million a year for WWE rights? It was not Netflix. Maybe it was Bob Iger at Disney. I mean, ESPN went and bought themselves some rights. It wasn't Disney. It wasn't ESPN. It was Base 10.
Base 10, which is going to be now the new company that we are going to bring into the pro wrestling lexicon. And Base 10, a company that is backed by one, as the filings reveal, one Anthony Khan. incorporated in 2014. Tony Khan is the sole officer, and it was Base 10 that placed a bid on WWE 3 years ago, according to these court filings. Base 10 is the owner of All Elite Wrestling, a professional wrestling promotion that plainly would enjoy significant synergies with WWE.
Yes, it does say that there. And it says Base 10 is the owner of All Elite Wrestling, which I think is a little bit imprecise. What they're trying to get across there is that the owner of Base 10 is the owner of All Elite Wrestling. Yes. In any case, this I had never heard of Base 10 before, but you can look it up. And not only does this is just a complaint from the plaintiffs, right? But they're also basing a lot of their case on this prior action where one of the plaintiffs in this class action shareholder lawsuit made a legal demand, which I think you can do under something called Section 220 in Delaware, where you can demand, if you're an investor in a company, you can demand that this Delaware company produce certain records. And they got things like board meeting minutes, which is what they're presumably basing a lot of this on. And that's what the footnotes are about that we don't have access to. So anyway, you look up Base 10, and sure enough, that's a company that, like you just said, the officer and director is... It's listed as Anthony Khan. I understand his given name is Anthony, unless it's got the Jaguars stadium address on it. There's a Flexing Gate email address on the business file. And this is in the Florida business records where you have to register your business in Florida. In addition to that, this is apparently the company that he used to acquire True Media Networks, which is a sports analytics firm that's very public that Tony Khan acquired in 2015. And he's mentioning Base 10 as this company that he created. He's alluding to his creation of it in an interview, in his own quote in Sports Business Journal. So no doubt here. And you got, in addition to that, you've got the defendants, the non-Vince defendants saying, we admit to the allegation in sentence one of this certain paragraph, which is the detailing of who the bidders were and what their bid prices were. If you're interested in what my litigation was with KKR, their issue was that they didn't want their identity tied to their bid price. They lost. All this was unredacted. We have the full 71-page complaint now, completely unredacted. We have the what are called the answers, where the defendants go paragraph by paragraph, and they say, we admit to this, we deny that, we deny that, we deny that, and so on. And we now have those completely unredacted now. So we have all the information, and never expected that we were going to find out, oh, Tony Khan is one of these bidders here.
Yeah, this was quite the uncovering. I wish we had just a camera on Brandon Thurston as he was going through the unredacted documents for the
first time. Well, I DM'd you immediately.
You did. And I
immediately sent you a screenshot of this part of the filing that says All Elite Wrestling.
Yes. Yeah. If you had not sent me the actual filing with it, I would have assumed you were just like bringing something out of like thin air. Now, this wasn't like completely just like totally out of left field, because there was reporting at the time. Yes. So once again, I feel we've gone through this timeline a million times. Vince McMahon forces his way back onto the company board right at the end of 2022 into 2023, installing George Barrios and Michelle Wilson, who are defendants in this ongoing shareholder lawsuit, and with the provision that he is coming back to explore strategic alternatives. And that begins the process that the shareholders allege was basically pre-selected, that Endeavor, who we have gone through this lawsuit, have been they were actively having meetings with the McMahons, allegedly one in August, one in December before McMahon returned to the board. And then in January 2023, this was reported by Barron's, which is like a publication attached to the Wall Street Journal. Quote, All Elite Wrestling, the top rival to WWE, led by Tony Khan and family, is in the pool of potential buyers for WWE, a person close to the potential transaction told Barron's, adding that the Khans will likely look for a financial partner to acquire the asset. Tony Khan's father, Shahid Khan, a co-owner of AEW, already owns the football team Jacksonville Jaguars and the English soccer club Fulham Football Club, indicating the duo have deep pockets. And there was also a report from Alex Sherman at CNBC, and many people just kind of just scoffed at this, and maybe rightfully so. Like, how serious of an interest did the Khan family have in this? Well, it turns out a $6.9 billion bid of like, you are not putting together a bid of that level and taking on partners and being able to present a bid like that if you don't have a seriousness about actually going after the asset. So that is kind of what we learned from this. This was a very real interest that the Khan family had and would have had to take on partners to be able to make this bid, which was going to be a cash bid that they were making. Like, this was not a stock deal that Endeavor ended up completing the merger through.
Right. And that is, so Base 10, the Khan entity, the Tony Khan entity, made by far the lowest bid. And I was looking at what the share price was. So I don't know. I've converted this out to full company value. That will be more intuitive for people. But so this is March of 2023 that these bids are being submitted. And if you look at what the stock price was, which I have over on a screen over here, this is, if you're watching in video, most of this blue line, well, I guess the last third of this blue line is March 2023, and this stock price is hovering around $80 to $85 per share. And if you look at what these bids were, they were, KKR offered 90 to 97 and a half. Liberty offered 95 to 100. Endeavor, with its all stock deal, offered what was considered to be 95, 66 cents. Base 10, Tony Khan, offered $76.83. So less than what the stock was trading for at the time by at least $5, as much as $10 or so. So to convert what these values are, I've done this in the article, it's almost $7 billion that he was offering, whereas the others were offering between $8 and $8.5, almost $9 billion. There's some ranges here. If you remember at the time, I believe it was Lucas Shaw of Bloomberg reported that Vince's asking price, if you look at Zillow, if W was a house and it was on Zillow, the asking price would be $9 billion. So these other parties were bidding much closer to what his asking price was. Base 10 was not. I don't know what to make of that. I did request comments to AEW. I did send some questions to Tony Khan and did not get any responses. But to ask, was this, how genuine was this bid? Was there any strategic element to it? Did not get any responses there, but it's interesting that this was a bid that was lower than what the stock price was.
Yeah. Certainly AEW, like, obviously for the industry itself, like, AEW would have, all of the, like, this is the sale of WWE or a merger. It was going to have, huge ramifications regardless of who ended up with this. But certainly, as many people have pointed out from this, like, this is, this would be the most sensational of outcomes, but also one that would probably be the worst outcome for just the health of the industry itself would be this outcome, which was one where, ultimately this would be, one company overseeing, like, essentially the entire market in the United States.
And as the, what we call the S4, WWE's own narrative that came out a month after the deal was made, where they use these pseudonyms for the bidders other than Endeavor, they did mention that this company that we now know to be Base 10, the Khan company, was going to need, I forget the phrasing that they used. They were going to need other investors, or they were going to need some major financing.
Yeah.
So it's not like Shad Khan has $7 billion in cash that he was going to unload to make this happen. But that there was going to be at least a lot of debt. It would have, if this bid came through, it would have resulted in the Khan family owning WWE and AEW.
And to clarify, like, Shad Khan technically does not have any involvement with Base 10. That is a Tony Khan,
as far as we know, business. Yes. It's the there's only one person listed as the director and officer, and that is, it says Anthony Khan, but it's Tony Khan.
Yes. You also note in your story, the bids of Endeavor, KKR, and Liberty were strong enough that those parties were granted access to a data room. I mean, the ultimate destination for, like, any children's party or just a fun date night, the data room, where they had access to non-public information about WWE, a standard practice at the stage of a major M&A process. There's no information in WWE's regulatory filings or material related to the merger shareholder lawsuit to indicate Tony Khan or any Base 10 representative had access to that data room.
Yes. And but we do have that about Liberty and KKR, I think, and definitely Endeavor. So the data room, I can only use my imagination what that would consist of. You would get a lot more than what's in SEC filings, though, for WWE. And this all makes sense, right? If you're going to get engaged in a potentially $9 billion transaction, you want to have all the information you can to be sure that this is something you want to do.
Yes. I mean, this was, you can understand like a certain degree of like you can certainly imagine a picture here where the Khan family is you have to accept all serious bids, but this would be the one entity you would want to be your would be the most sensitive you would be towards any type of non-public information from what is a chief competitor of theirs.
Right. Come on in, look at our contracts, look at all of our information.
Tony Khan could find out finally about the bot situation. Like, what is going on?
So I do believe that all these parties signed NDAs when they went into the data room or they got access to non-public information. That's alluded to in KKR's motion. They're part of the reason why they're arguing this certain their identity and bid price should not be revealed is because one of the rules is that you have to be treating the information as confidential, sort of outside this legal process. And they do allude to a non-disclosure agreement that was agreed to as a result of this bidding process.
Now, separate from the reporting, in a world like as best you can just pure speculate, what do you feel? What was the desire of Tony Khan to purchase WWE? What would be the purpose of that, other than, obviously this would be control of the largest entity in your competition at that point. Like what is the follow through beyond that?
To run a successful business and to merge AEW and WWE into one wrestling company.
One company itself. And that would be,
maybe you would preserve the brands or something like that. I don't know. But you would have one giant super monopoly of pro wrestling.
Would Nick have to work for the kid?
I prefer not to discuss that.
Okay. I mean, we'll leave that for all the invariable think pieces that will come out of the what ifs that you have just opened up. You've opened up a cottage industry of articles and Twitter threads that will come out of this what if.
I mean, it kind of gets to the issue that this lawsuit is about, which is, according to their theory, Vince and Ari made a deal, or he really preferred Ari. He knew Ari would allow him to stay. So, and we have a lot of evidence in this case of interactions between Ari and Vince, and Mark Shapiro having knowledge of Vince's upcoming return months out. Would Vince have been allowed to stay if the other bidders had prevailed here? And their theory is that, well, they sort of rushed this process through. Not only did they give Endeavor lead time to get this to start considering this deal and details of it, but they also sort of rushed it through and didn't allow Liberty and KKR in particular to develop their bids. And maybe they would have come through. Maybe they would have cooperated on a bid. This price could have gotten higher, is their argument. But the theory is that, well, Vince wasn't so sure that they were going to allow him to stay. And I suppose with Tony Khan, it would have been similar, but it's sort of it's a threshold issue because his bid was by far the lowest anyway.
This whole article is up at postwrestling.com. I do encourage people to go read all of the reporting. Brandon did a fantastic job on this. And
don't just quote tweet it. Read it.
Well, you know what? It goes a long way when you actually do go to the source of such reporting. It is appreciated nonetheless. Any last thoughts just in terms of the information that was unredacted and anything specific on the KKR and Liberty Media front that you found here beyond what maybe some of your earlier theories, yeah. if any of that was somewhat founded.
Not yet. There is a deposition with someone from KKR, presumably the partner who was most involved with this negotiation. We do have a small part of his deposition. There may be more to come there when there are, I don't know if we want to get into the minutiae here, but there are still things that are redacted. It's not like I've filed this notice of challenge. By the way, there's this other party that's involved in an Endeavor lawsuit that's filed a notice of challenge. It's not like everything in this case is unredacted. This is sort of a chipping away, and they file things that weren't filed at all. They redact some things. Then there may be additional rounds of challenging here. We'll see what happens. One thing that did stand out that is not in this report, but is in the now fully unredacted complaint, is this notion that Nikon got a bonus related to completing this merger that was much higher than what their advisement firm that advised them on the amounts of the bonuses had recommended, according to the complaint. Now, the defendants deny many of the allegations of this complaint, I believe, including this one. But you've basically got Nikon being recommended to get something like, I think, a $6 million bonus at the closing of this merger. He ends up getting, I believe, something like a $15 million bonus. So that's an issue, and it's sort of the plaintiffs frame it as, Vince controlled the compensation committee, and Vince helped him or encouraged the compensation committee to give him a really great bonus. Frank Riddick got a big bonus as well. He's not a defendant here, but I believe Ben Paul Levesque got a big bonus in addition to that, and he is a defendant here.
Okay. Well, we're going to continue on with more WWE, and of course, when they were propping up 2026, one of the keys was the fact that they were going to be having three events this year set for Saudi Arabia. One is in the books with the Royal Rumble in January, and then we had reported recently that the next return was supposed to be, and is technically still internally listed, for the end of June, with one source indicating it would be in Riyadh. Of course, the ongoing war in Iran is making any kind of events happening over in the Middle East become very tenuous. Formula One announced last weekend the cancellation of its races that were scheduled in April in both Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, and the WWE date, at least this June date, is certainly going to be up in the air, given the escalation. The New York Times just had a story today about Saudi Arabia that is very much pushing back against Iran and its attacks that it has been within the region as well. So June is still 3 months away, but it looks as though Night of Champions, like, it's not at a place yet where they have had to make a final decision, but it is going to be coming up on that time that they're going to have to make a decision here. And it's not looking great that this will happen in Saudi Arabia in June.
If we could digress back to the prior story, while we're talking about Saudi Arabia real quick, not only did there were no major media companies that bid, but people may remember, and I sure do, one night in January, just a few days after this M&A process had been announced, I remember, eyeball emojis and people lighting Twitter on fire with the notion that it was imminent that the PIF or some Saudi Arabian government organization was going to buy WWE. I was told the opposite. Lots of other people were told the opposite. And so they were never a bidder either, despite, I think there's sort of a fatalistic notion that eventually, and maybe they still will someday. You can't rule out anything when it comes to a PIF that's owning LIV Golf and is invested in lots of other areas of sports. But no apparent bid from the PIF, which is what the public investment fund in Saudi Arabia, or the GA, or any other government entity from Saudi Arabia. Nonetheless, so we've been told that this Night of Champions premium live event is scheduled for June 27th. Particularly in this case, I think that could change. we don't know if it's if there are any tentative plans or any alternative plans that are being considered. I wonder if they will do something. I mean, I guess they have to have a PLE in that time frame, right? You can't just not have one. Probably you've got to satisfy the ESPN contract and Netflix contract, but by fulfilling, you know, a certain number of PLEs. But yes, there've been many attacks in Riyadh, which is the city, which is the capital city of Saudi Arabia. It's where WWE has done most of their Saudi Arabia PLEs.
8 ballistic missiles exploding over the Saudi capital on Thursday as well. So this is very much ongoing.
Right. The other city that WWE has done events in, but not as many, is Jeddah, which is on the other side of the country. It's on the western coast of the country by the Red Sea. It's right near Mecca, the holy city. And Riyadh, on the other hand, is sort of central, but a little bit to the east, and it is closer there, therefore, to Iran. And it's the capital city. It's not far from an airbase where 2 people were killed as a result of a strike on March 8th. So I don't know that, you know, that there's going to be any definite plans to move this until we get much closer. You know, if you listen to the news, certain people on the news say this is supposed to be a short war, but you've got the Formula One events, which were scheduled for April. Those are being canceled. I mean, June 27th is much further off, but I'm sure there are considerations being made. We do know that there was a message within TKO sent out to all TKO staff, just basically reiterating the guidance from the U.S. State Department about not traveling in the area and in basically all of the Middle East, which, you know, looking into this for this article, it's not just Saudi Arabia that's been struck. Obviously, this is a war between the United States and Israel against Iran, and Iran is struck back at a wide variety of countries in the Middle East region.
Yeah, and I mean, this is going to have an impact on UFC as well, that has shows set for this year. And I mean, if you had to sort of play this out in the event that this event is taken out of Saudi Arabia, I would imagine we would see a similar situation to what happened during the pandemic, where they just tacked us on at the end of the deal. It's not as though they would just be out this $50 million. It would just be deferred to when this event can be delivered in the future.
Right. These are at least $50 million per event. And like you said, I think if they end up not doing these or postponing them or just not doing them this year, as they did in the pandemic, they ended up being, as you know, according to the executives on the earnings call, they got tacked on. I think Vince would say, and in the pandemic, they would get tacked on to the end of the deal. This is a 10-year deal, which I think is originally going to extend to 2027. So you might have a few additional events. I mean, you've missed, I believe they missed 3 as a result of the pandemic, something like that. So that's an extra year and a half, at least right there.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Well, let us go on to WWE and Front Office Sports, who announced a content partnership this past week. WWE, the global leader in sports and entertainment and front office sports, the leading multi-platform media and news organization covering the business of sports, announced today a new content partnership that will bring audiences closer to key WWE moments and tentpole events through access-driven, behind-the-scenes content. During this dynamic content partnership, WWE and FOS will collaborate on the creative development and execution of storytelling projects surrounding marquee premium live events, including WrestleMania and international growth. Front Office Sports will showcase the behind the scenes of WWE tentpole events across its website and social channels, beginning with WrestleMania 42. And WWE joins the National Football League and National Women's Soccer League as the most recent sports entities to strike a unique content partnership with Front Office Sports. And this expands, you know, the NFL at this period, they have similar deals now with Front Office Sports, with Bleacher Report, and then these other outlets, The Gist, Overtime. When the NFL announced this similar deal with Front Office Sports, there was a lot of reaction to this about this being a conflict when it comes to a journalistic entity entering into a content agreement with a partner, becoming a partner with a league you're covering. And its CEO, Adam White, told Axios, "We can now go to advertisers and say, hey, we are an official content partner in the NFL, and that's just going to make it much easier for our sales team in market. The reason why we did this deal is all about making sure that we can provide our audience with more access to better content, and then we can provide our advertisers with an ability to leverage NFL marks and IP in ways that we haven't been able to in the past." Which again, that
what does
was,
that mean? Can you translate that to English?
I will venture to guess that Bernstein and Woodward never gave a statement like that about their work at the Washington Post. That would be
who was the person in charge at that time?
The Graham family.
Yeah, I don't really understand what this deal involves. What is the terminology being used?
Content partnership.
A new content partnership that will bring audiences. This is the press release. Bring audiences closer to key WWE moments and tentpole events through access-driven behind-the-scenes content. So, stories like news articles type stories around WPLEs are going to be featured exclusively. Maybe
I think you'll get like writers that get embedded at WWE events for the weekend, follow around a performer. You know, it's
is that journalism? If you're being, because it looks like there's a. So, what is the nature of this agreement? It's Front Office Sports being paid by WWE, it sounds like.
There's obviously exchange here. Who this is benefiting more, you know, Front Office Sports clearly sees this as valuable to them to have access to WWE, that they can have this content that will find an audience, that we can monetize this content. But certainly when you're a sports business outlet that is reporting on these figures, and this is the part where we can disclose for those that do not remember, Front Office Sports is the outlet where Brandon and I worked with Tim Marchman to report out our story back 2 years ago about the figures that were not named in the sex trafficking lawsuit filed by Janelle Grant. And one of the reasons that we went to an outlet like Front Office Sports is because we could have legal protection with a major outlet, as opposed to reporting this out on our individual outlets. And that, unfortunately, is a reality when you are reporting on powerful figures, of having that type of protection. And I'll speak for myself. I don't think Brandon will disagree. We did not encounter any issues with Front Office Sports. They were extremely open to working with us and extremely helpful. Tim Marchment was with the site itself at the time and was a huge asset to helping us with the story as well. But it certainly begs the question, if this type of reporting is what Front Office Sports is going to be looking at, if they have an existing partnership, and is this type of reporting going to put weight on that relationship, that they would not necessarily be looking at stories like this if pitched.
Yeah,
that's for them to decide.
And so this article, just to put this in context, this article is from just over 2 years ago now. It came out about just under 2 months after the Grant suit was filed. The Grant suit contained some pseudonyms of four different W corporate officers who only called W corporate officer 1 through 4. These are not people who are accused of abuse, but they are essentially accused of enabling McMahon, or this is sort of why WWE is a defendant in the Grant case, is because Grant alleges that the company was negligent and enabled McMahon, and points to these corporate officers. One of them is Nick Khan, who is, of course, still the current WWE president. The others are Brad Blum, Stephanie McMahon, and Brian Nurse. Brian Nurse no longer with the company. It seems like somebody who is having some discomfort and resistance to what Vince was doing, according to Grant's complaint. It's not like we've been in touch, like, so I can speak for myself. It's not like I've been in touch with front office sports. We did this one story, and it was a freelance story. But it does raise the question, would reporting, you know, if someone came to front office sports editor with a story about WWE involving WWE that was not favorable to WWE, that was very unfavorable to WWE, was nonetheless a true story with accurate information, would they be running it with this relationship happening? It's all, to my view, a part of a larger pattern of doing business. We just had a story last week about how something as petty as letter grades on ESPN, with the existing partnership between ESPN and WWE, letter grades got cut after WWE expressed some discomfort with Andreas Hale's letter grades two events into this PLE deal. There's also Nick Khan is named as a personal investor in an outlet called John Wall Street, which covers sports business. So it's, you know, it's a, it, of course, and about a year into Nick Khan's run in as president in WWE, they announced a deal with The Ringer, which is Bill Simmons' outlet. And Nick Khan has gone on to be interviewed on the Bill Simmons podcast quite a few times, as well as other WWE talent. I suppose if you're purely thinking about how to do business, I mean, wouldn't it behoove you to get these really, I don't want to say dependent relationships, but to get these really strong and deep relationships. And sometimes maybe this involves the exchange of money, and that just helps us get strong and good, favorable coverage, and helps raise our reach, helps everybody look at WWE in a positive light, and, you know, makes WWE look great.
I agree with you. This is a larger, like, this is just the nature of things, of where they are going. And it's as though, you know, if you are an entity like a front office sports and similar ones, you name The Ringer there, like, part of their appeal is to be able to have access to athletes, in this case, WWE talent, that they feel is going to be of value to their audience. And I am sure that they are going to state, of course, we will have complete separation and it does not change any of our coverage. Of course, they're going to say that, but your eyes will be the indicator of that. And it's not so much looking at how WWE is framed in these stories. It's more so, what are the stories they're not reporting on? What are the stories that maybe in a prior incarnation they would have been on top of? It's not to say front office sports was actively covering WWE on a routine basis, but major story, like when Brock returned at SummerSlam, they covered that last summer. Obviously our story, like they do cover WWE. And I think naturally when you look at ESPN, and if WWE is going to take issue with letter grades, again, it's what are the stories that you're not even going to pitch? And it becomes
the questions that they're not asking. As Bill Simmons said himself, nobody wants to hear him ask anybody about the Vince question. They're going to give a shitty answer. It's a shitty question.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of did the work for Cody in that interview. Cody didn't even have to deflect. You know, that's why, like, I think that a lot of readers, viewers, I think they are starting to understand, like, instead of this catch-all of media, I think you are going to see, like, different levels of what are people's laneways. If you are in wrestling media and your product is delivering access to talent and interviews, it is not in your best interest to be adversarial. If part of your product is having that access and open communications with these promotions, it's not in your interest to be doing that. I think that the fact is, like, the wrestling outlets that are going to be doing serious reporting, I don't see it growing. I think it's going to be a very small amount, because it's probably the hardest lane to make any kind of return on. And it's one that is, you know, it's just, it's the incentive structure is so against this kind of work. And that goes to all of these larger outlets as well, that are just, the overhead costs are enormous and journalism is expensive. And it's, what is the easiest way to get a return on this content for us? And actual journalism is really expensive, and it is an easy way to just exit that in place of the content agreement business of, you know, just access journalism and looking for stories that are going to prop up your subjects instead of put them under a harsh light.
I think for a lot of the people listening to us, right, this is a wrestling podcast. And at least in terms of the feedback I see, we probably see about media coverage of wrestling companies, a lot of it is really concerned with how wrestling outlets cover wrestling companies, which WWE does care about.
But more than you think.
And I think they have especially cared about that since Nick Khan has come in, and Nick Khan is deeply, I mean, where did Nick Khan work before he came to WWE? He worked at CAA, and he was the agent to like almost all the stars at ESPN, right? Whether it's Stephen A. Smith Mike Greenberg, the boxing guy, right? And the Colin Cowherd, Ariel Helwani, many people who actually went on to interview him. But the thing that W cares a lot more about, and which people listening to this podcast don't hyperanalyze, is how W gets covered by the media that they care a lot more about, which is front office sports and ESPN and John Wall Street and The Ringer and everybody else that's way above wrestling media. And I think that's, you know, Nick Khan's background in sports media has been, you know, very, very effective in getting WWE to come across in a positive light by, you know, building relationships with all these places. And I think a lot of his interviews have been done by people who he either was the agent for, you know, at CAA when he worked there, or, you know, somebody who he has that WWE has a business relationship with
in the form
of The Ringer, or both. And there are some exceptions, to be fair, that Matt Bellany, probably John O'Rand. What stands out to me, though, is when he went on CNBC around the time of the merger negotiation, and Morgan Brennan asked him a few fair and tough questions. And, you know, we have him, you know, basically contradicting now what's in the most interesting part of this big piece I did a few months ago, basically contradicting whether Vince had any involvement in creative, which, you know, you've got a signal message showing that they were discussing creative. So, you know, I think it's really important that there's independent, indifferent media that's able to, I think people use the word adversarial, and like, I don't think there's anything compulsory about, I don't think of what I do as adversarial, but I think the way people use adversarial around media coverage, I think people would apply it to what I do. But I don't like pick up the laptop every day and go, all right, how am I going to get some adversarial coverage of wrestling today? I think, you know, what I'm looking for information that's important and that informs the public interest. And hopefully the people are going to want to read, but if they do or don't, whatever. And, you know, it's often not information that the companies want out there, because if they wanted it out there, they've got much bigger megaphones than I do to get out the message that they want.
Yeah. And I think like you couple it with, like, I think their idea too, when they introduced the press conferences, I think in their mind, it was going to be populated by a lot of the outlets that you mentioned, at least for the big shows. And I think at a certain point, I think it becomes in their best interest that, like the wrestling media is almost like grouped into, it's like this small niche base. These are people that do not spend, this is their side gig. And by us populating the room with these wrestling outlets, it's like we're elevating that form of wrestling media. I think a lot of that goes to that. It's very indicative of who they want their talent out there speaking with. Like they want, larger outlets, typically ones that are not covering wrestling on any kind of like day-to-day basis, or is just web-based wrestling content. So it becomes, and like they have every right to, that is their media strategy. It's like that is fair for them to have any strategy they want when it comes to that media. But it's one as well that, to look at our vantage point, I think it comes with enormous skepticism. And 1 week after this ESPN story that we reported on, to look at this front office sports story, like it's more so it's a symptom. It's not the problem. It's just indicative. And, you know, front office sports, it's like, here is a company that its majority stakeholder is Redbird Capital. It's in bed with content partnerships now with the NFL and the WWE. It's like, if you want to work at this level of the media, like the conflicts are kind of just, that is something you have to accept, whether you're at an ESPN, whether you're at any of these major outlets, like, you are going to be in a position where you may have to report on your own company, or you're going to have to frequently make disclosures, because it's impossible to avoid them at that level. And for, selfishly, I'm glad I have no part of it.
I mean, like to an extent, when it comes to sports, especially, right? Almost every major media platform is broadcasting sports, and if they're going to do some sort of news coverage of sports, which they almost all do, right? There's an inherent conflict there, just like there is in that relationship between WWE and ESPN. Anyway, reading this press release when they announced this, I think it's remarkable that the last sentence in the press release is that WWE joins the National Football League and the National Women's Soccer League as the most recent sports entities to strike a unique content partnership with FOS. I think, you know, WWE would say, well, look, it's nothing that the NFL, and the NFL is the greatest thing in the world. It's nothing that the NFL and the NWSL aren't doing. So what? I mean, this is great. And they're doing it and we're doing it. What the NFL does is good. It's like when I was an indie wrestler, W does it, that makes it good. If the NFL does it, that makes it okay.
I mean, the NFL now has a stake in ESPN. Like it's again, like this is where, like in a very hurt media ecosystem at this point, this is where you can exert like these partnerships. In another era, you would have had this separation, that this stuff would not exist. But we are long past that at this point. And I think you just have to be, at the very least, understanding of where these things are, question these aspects. But quite frankly, I think it's not so much how you're going to interpret stories that are reported. It's what is not being reported, and you're never going to have that answer. And that goes for all of these entities. When the incentive structure is against digging into the underbelly of a partner, like that sort of defeats the purpose. And I also question like how much audience is out there that are devouring like original journalism versus, so-and-so gets 1 hour with Randy Orton backstage at WrestleMania. It's like there's an audience for that, and probably a large audience for it. So it's not like you can even necessarily, like if you are just assessing this as a business, like that's going to be this very difficult balance of business versus like journalism that you are trying to deliver.
Yeah, I think that's, to an extent, it's a tale that's as old as the press, that there's this huge tension between revenue generation and attention versus what's actually in the public interest. What's what I told you off air, and I told Way earlier that, you know, we, about this article that we did today about Tony Khan's bid for WWE in 2023, like we've reached peak engagement because we've combined these two subjects that everybody thinks that they alone are the experts on, which are corporate M&A and AEW. And so it's getting a lot more attention than the article on the merger lawsuit that we did at the end of December, which I think is much more in public interest around the notion that, I mean, we were revealing evidence in that article that Mark Shapiro knew that Vince was going to come back the day that he retired. And a lot of other information there. And the piece of information that I think gets more attention in that piece than is in the public interest for it to get attention is the notion that Vince is, apparently meddling in the WrestleMania main event. Like that's clickable. That's something that's going to get upvoted on Reddit. It's going to get quote tweets about it. There's a big difference between what's going to engage the audience, obviously, and what is really going to inform people to be able to make better decisions. It's like eating vegetables.
Well, you just wait till that June trial. Okay. I think that's going to have everyone's interest.
Well, travel plans are in place.
Okay. Let's finish off with a few other topics. WrestleMania 42 tickets. They actually saw some movement this week after the 316 sale on Monday, where all WWE tickets for 24 hours, they cut off 31.6% off the price. And the result, according to WrestleTix, was the WrestleMania Saturday increasing by 1,905 and WrestleMania Sunday moving 2,217 tickets. So in looking at the secondary market, WrestleMania Saturday is going for $210 for the cheapest ticket on the secondary market, $202 for WrestleMania Sunday. So they are still about 11 to 12% off last year's pace for WrestleMania when it comes to tickets distributed, but significantly higher get-in price a year ago, where it was like $320 to $370 per ticket to get in on either night.
So if the ticket prices are not lower and the volume, the number of tickets sold, I mean, this is distributed, but that's probably correlated, is lower, then we're talking about a lower gate than this record-breaking $66 million two-day gate.
Right. These are secondary market prices, but I think that would correlate. That, I mean, like, first of all, for these, I would imagine, like, these roughly 4,000 tickets that all got moved, I imagine they were all, or just about 95%, a result of this sale, where you're talking 31% off of these tickets. So I think it's reasonable that, like, WrestleMania, it got to like 34,000-35,000 tickets, and it hit a wall over the last month, where there's been basically no movement for these tickets over the last month, and we have got heel turns, title changes, blood, Brock Lesnar, 31.6% off. I mean, they are hitting everything possible, and this sale was the first thing that saw some movement. So I think if they're hoping to legitimately sell tickets, it's going to be a result of tickets coming down, and you're going to have to compromise this gate, whatever it is, which, I mean, for them coming up short, they still might have the second most successful show in history over this, right, this weekend, when we're talking about $66 million gate last year.
Yeah, I think they have definitely moved the window on ticket prices, if nothing else. There also was a press release, I think this week, that you can now buy tickets on the roof of Allegiant Stadium for WrestleMania.
On the roof?
You didn't see that?
I saw some. I thought these were the ones on top of the entrance like they had last year. On the roof?
Maybe it was that.
I think it's on the entrance at the...
All right.
I don't know if they're putting people on the roof.
Okay. I'll look.
You didn't grab any tickets on the roof, did you?
Not yet, but you can't rule it out.
Your friends at WWE might have seated us on the roof if we had gone.
Tickets for premium seats atop, oh, you're right, atop iconic WrestleMania 42 set. All right.
Yes. Okay. Great seat if you can get it. Also this week, Fightful reported that the They report that WWE had originally decided on the blackout in order to help boost ticket sales for events. But now it looks like on Friday, Circa Las Vegas's Stadium Swim revealed that the ban had been lifted, giving way to watch parties for locations that licensed the PLE through Johan Promotions as recently as a week before some venues had spoken to WWE and believed that WWE would stand firm. So it looks like they are alleviating the restrictions on watch parties, which was an interesting one because that is a method solely for selling tickets. But I mean, if you're the Las Vegas convention that is paying, like, I'm sure you're not crazy about the fact we're paying for this money and it's not just so you can sell tickets. It's like we are spending this money so that it can boost revenue for many businesses in town. And I'm sure there's a real series of interesting stories about the planning of this year's Mania and, you know, and what the expectation was of the Las Vegas visitors and convention authority about, you know, how much Mania costs this year compared to last year and the expectation that they would equal, if not exceed, what last year's did, which, yeah, we'll find out what the final figures are.
Because what the LVCVA, Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority, who is a respondent to my petition in Nevada District Court, what they want is people to not only travel into Las Vegas to see all the WWE events around WrestleMania, but they also want people to do business at restaurants and bars and things like that. So you could see, I could see, we don't know, but I could see there being some conversations that were had there about preferences. Yes, it's, and they're paying probably millions of dollars in a slight fee. They paid $5 million last year. We don't know what they paid this year. We're coming up on 11 months or so since my initial records request to try to learn what the nature of the last year's WrestleMania and this year's WrestleMania were between WWE and the LVCVA, and we've got no progress yet.
Well, we'll find out if the Saudi Arabia authorities are any quicker for next year's WrestleMania.
Yeah, I don't think they celebrated National Freedom of Information Day on Monday.
No, maybe they missed that one. All in tickets go on sale Friday. The pre-sale already began this past Monday to compare to 2 years ago. The last time they went to Wembley, the final number was over 53,300 tickets distributed. Turnstile count per WrestleNomics, 46,476 at the time. AEW did announce over 50,000 paid for that show. So I would imagine like that's kind of your your goal that you're shooting for this time. And we're going to see what, you know, with a year away. They did go to the O2 last year. It did very well at the O2. But returning to Wembley, what the demand is going to be for the return of AEW now to the Wembley Stadium.
What's good enough? What's a success?
To me, over 40,000, I would look at as a success. I think if they replicate or exceed what they did in 2024, I think that's a really big success. I don't think anyone is expecting anywhere near the 2023 performance. I think that was probably a once in a generation type of demand that they're going to get for a stadium of this size. Yeah. But I would say over 40,000, I would classify that as successful. For
it looks like, I mean, according to WrestleTix, they're only putting 14,000 on the map.
Is that for the pre-sale or is Friday an expansion of that number?
I suppose that could be a pre-sale only.
Right. So, yeah, the pre-sale began Monday and then tomorrow's the big day. And I'm sure you can monitor WrestleTix or what is the township to be watching on, Brandon, that we that you reached out to. It was, what am I thinking of?
I don't know.
To disclose the turnstile count.
Oh, the Brent Council.
Brent Council. That's yes. What I'm thinking of. Yes, the Brent Council. Okay. These are all the things you need to be equipped with. All right. Well, there you go. That's
you know, in some venue contracts, it's explicitly agreed to that turnstile counts, to AEW in particular, WWE has its own issues with its venue contracts, but in AEW contracts, see, we go after everybody with adversarial reporting here. In AEW venue contracts, explicit in some of their, they have a confidentiality clause that says, don't turn over those turnstile accounts. I'm paraphrasing.
Do not respond to this individual, Thurston, comma Brandon. Okay, that that is.
It doesn't say my name. Let's not mislead anyone. Yeah. But it does say if there's a public. It says basically if there's a public records request or there's some legal reason why you need to turn this over, i.e., public records law, then you help us claim that this is a trade secret. This attendance information, live event data. This is a trade secret. This attendance data that we sometimes announce and use to promote ourselves with.
What? My question would be, why is that a secret? It's like the final score of a game. Is that an in-game secret? I think you should challenge everything, Brandon. That's my advice to you. Okay, I think all these things are challengeable. You're challenging in this lawsuit. It's opened my eyes to the entire world of a philosophical question of what is yours to hide.
You know, while we're talking about front office sports and being, you know, pessimistic about the state of media, what there is there's an internet connection, and it's really easy, probably in a way that it never has before, I don't know that I was going to be doing a notice of challenge, certainly not 20 years ago. I would not have been able to do this 5 years ago, not part of that's learning stuff, but there's all these courts are online for talking about, if we're talking about lawsuits, all the language and the statutes of public records law are all online. Many of these government entities that have to comply with public records law use portals. So all this stuff being super online makes it all quite accessible in a way that it had not been in the past. There's at least that.
Well, there's some light at the end of the media tunnel for folks out there. Let's end off with viewership notes. So a week ago, Raw on March 9th, doing 2.8 million million views and 5 million hours viewed. 10th globally on the top 10 chart, 6th in the U.S., 7th in Canada, ranked in the top 10 in 14 countries. And then going into later in the week, Impact did its largest viewership to date since launching on AMC. They did 259,000 viewers a week ago and a 0.04 in the demo. So a new high for them since, they're 2 months into the AMC run at this point. SmackDown did a really big number on Friday, 1,419,000 viewers and a 0.32. This comes off what I would say was a disappointing number the week before, despite the Cody Drew McIntyre title match that they had. But this was their largest audience since February the 6th and ranked in the top 10 in 4 international countries, including your standbys of Canada and Bolivia. But a very good number for SmackDown on the USA Network last Friday. And then Collision Saturday night bounced back the week before. They had gone against both the NXT Vengeance Day PLE and the UFC on CBS. So this week they were up 24% in viewers with 458,000 viewers and a 0.07. It was their best number since February the 21st. So after a down week, we saw a lot of bounce back. And in the case of SmackDown and Collision, their highest in several weeks as well. So this weekend, Collision is going to be all over the map because it's airing Saturday and Sunday after the NCAA tournament. So they're going to have a great lead in, but it is going to be broken up over 2 nights and start time to be determined because they're going to be at the mercy of the basketball games.
And we do have an NXT number that came out right shortly before we went to air, according to Programming Insider. 588,000 viewers for NXT on CW this past Tuesday and a 0.07 in the demo. I'll get a report up for that soon. These NXT numbers have been down, and a loyal subscriber has been pointing out to me that there have been some coverage issues with CW in some markets lately.
Yeah, they even mentioned it on the broadcast Tuesday. They were preempted in Chicago on Tuesday, and yeah, unlike in the past, usually like they will replay in the market like either right after or that weekend, but we typically don't get a updated number, but yeah, Chicago was definitely affected this past Tuesday.
From our experience dealing with this with SmackDown, when SmackDown was on Fox, which is also a broadcast network, with when SmackDown would be preempted for preseason games, it would often be, and maybe just Fox is a bigger network, so it had more of this, but it would be preempted on a sister network or be preempted at a different time. And that would, I was told, it would get all get aggregated back into the number that ultimately ended up being reported as the Nielsen final number. But I don't know if this is happening to the, if there's the same sort of makeup happening here with NXT.
Well, I would shudder to think that Chicago was left out of Booker T Appreciation Night. So I really hope that the market was fulfilled.
Me too.
All right, everyone. We have landed the plane. So we are going to say goodbye to everyone for another week, another packed edition of Pollock and Thurston. Congratulate your new homeowner, Brandon Thurston.
This is it for this this wall right here.
We've had a great run. Is this going to be a new location by next week?
Yeah. Yeah. The real serious move is happening Saturday. I'll probably similar background. I don't know if you'll even notice, but yes.
We'll do a before and after picture. We'll see how different the setup looks a week from now. So
we have to hold ourselves accountable somehow.
Well, best of luck on the move and prevailing in the bidding process. I hope that your identity being disclosed does not affect future bids. If you ever do look at another home down the road, I hope that
I didn't even have to promise the seller a certain number of board seats or a lifetime role in my house. So it was a pretty good deal.
Well, congratulations. A sale well consummated. Thank you to everyone for joining us here on Thursday night. And you can catch all of Brandon's work at WrestleNomics.com and on PostWrestling.com, where he is constantly reporting. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics to support independent journalism, folks. Support. It's how this stuff gets done, okay? These records requests, they don't just fall out of the sky, okay? It requires your help as well. So with that, we say goodbye, and we'll be back next Thursday. I'll be here in Toronto. Brandon, find out where he is coming to us live as he abandons his home to find a new one.
So it'll be Buffalo still. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, I wasn't going to disclose that, but now you put it out there. So, all right, everyone. Goodbye.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.